Welcome to the Daily Cron for Tuesday, January 29th, 2019. I'm Stephen Tolton. Today, I want to talk a little bit about that FaceTime bug that was recently discovered or made public. And the bug in question allows somebody to use a new feature of FaceTime, which is the audio and video calling feature in Apple products, to call somebody, and then while it's still ringing on your target, you know, phone, to add yourself on your phone into the conference call, and then you will be able to hear the audio and potentially even see video from the other person's phone before they have actually answered the call. So that's a serious privacy-invading bug. Very, very, very serious. So what happened was Apple last night closed down the servers. They disabled the servers that allowed this feature to operate. So currently, as of the recording of this podcast, you're not vulnerable to this exploit. Like, nobody is, because they shut down the servers. And Apple already publicly announced that they are aware of the bug. They're working on a fix. It'll be released in a few days. And it takes a few days to vet these types of things. Like, they have to, you know, when you're fixing a complicated piece of software like, you know, video and audio calling, and that's deeply embedded in the operating system, like this FaceTime feature is, you don't want to rush out a fix. So I think they're doing exactly what I would expect a reputable company to do. They are saying, we know about the bug, we've mitigated it, so you're not vulnerable at the moment, and we will release a fix in the short, you know, in the near future. But the explosion of coverage of this may have led some people to either panic or kind of rub their hands in glee at being able to call out Apple, you know, the privacy-centric company. And I just want to push back a little bit on both of those ideas. First, I want to look at the issue of taking like pleasure in calling out Apple here, or maybe even trying to set up a false equivalency between Apple and some of their competitors, and saying that Apple's privacy focus is just, you know, maybe marketing or something like that, or questioning that focus. I personally have no doubt that Apple is a privacy-focused company. Given my direct experience as a software developer on the platform and watching over the years as various holes, as it were, have been filled in their operating system, and have they progressively hardened their entire ecosystem against abuse and unauthorized access of personal data, how they have gone out of their way to not collect personal data from you. So I can give some specific examples here. It used to be a lot easier to get certain data like contacts and photos and such. And they, over the years, they put more and more barriers up where you have to get opt-in permission from the user to access this stuff. You know, that's good. Annoying from a developer standpoint, can make user usability of software a little less sometimes. But good overall, because they have been better at vetting software when you submit it to the App Store and saying, and like rejecting you if you're not being upfront about what you're doing. You know, that doesn't mean they're perfect and catch everybody who tries to get around the rules, but I think it definitely improved the situation on the platform there, especially in terms of like contact sharing, which was a thing for a while that people didn't realize their contacts were potentially being uploaded to a developer server. I'll say the design of the App Store itself does not really give you, the developer, any kind of insight into your customers. You don't know who they are, even if they're subscribers. You don't know who they are. If they contact you, you can find out who they are, but you don't know if someone buys software, buys your app, you don't know who they are. Apple knows who they are because they know your credit card, but they act as this intermediary and they don't share that information with you. You don't get a lot of information about your sales. You get kind of like some aggregate numbers, you know, crash reports and such. That's all opt-in. And again, you don't get personally identifiable information from that. You know, you just don't. So that's another thing there. I'll say over the years, the jailbreaking community seems to have found it harder and harder to jailbreak iOS, which jailbreaking is basically bypassing the security of the iOS device, like your iPhone, in order to install software that you didn't get from the App Store. And doing that requires you to find an exploit, like a software exploit, a bug, that you can use to gain access to the phone's software, the operating system, you shouldn't be able to normally. And that's gotten progressively harder. And that entire community, I think, has been dwindling for years. It's not gone, but it's definitely not as big of a deal as I remember it used to be. It used to be the case, even I briefly jailbroke my phone, and then I thought twice about that, said, yeah, maybe it's not a good idea to open up my phone to some random software that wasn't vetted at all. So I haven't done that in years, but I know it's harder to do now than it ever has been. And, that's part of it. Apple has released white papers about their security strategies, the layers of security involved, how their encryption works, how iMessage encryption works, for instance, how the device encryption works on your phone. They had that whole battle with the FBI over unlocking a phone, et cetera, et cetera. There's many examples of Apple over the years, standing up for privacy and actively trying to avoid gaining access to user data they didn't absolutely need. So I do think it's part of their culture, and I think it's because their business model, I think it's primarily because their business model does not need our personal information. They make money by selling you products and services directly, where you pay them money out of your pocket for that iPhone, then you pay them for Apple Music access, and you pay them for iCloud access. And, that's where they make their money from. They're not making their money by selling advertising. Interestingly, Apple used to have its own advertising platform. You know how Google has AdSense? Google ads are everywhere. Facebook has, Facebook ads. Well, Apple used to have an ad program that only worked inside their apps on, your iPhone, but you used to be able to use their service to put ads into your apps, and it was like a little bit more of a trustworthy service than some of these other ones are in terms of what they're doing. And they shut that down a while back, a couple years ago at this point. So they don't even offer an advertising service at all now. They just don't have a strong incentive to want to collect your data. And as a developer, and as I already talked about some examples, they just don't collect that data, as far as I can tell. And I can understand why. Why would you want to take that liability if you don't need it? They've talked about for years and different mechanisms they use to anonymize data that they do collect, so they can do machine learning stuff without needing to know, who you are or anything specific about you or where the data came from, per se. And they do a lot of the stuff that, perhaps Google does on big servers, they do it on the devices themselves. That means that sometimes the implementation on the Apple side is in some ways not as full-featured as on the Google side. For instance, Photos, I think, is a good example. A lot of people love Photos, Google Photos, because you can put your photos in that system and you can search and find them real easily, and it does a really good job at identifying the things in the photos. Apple's Photos app on your iPhone does the same thing. It just does the processing on device, and it's not as good. But that's understandable because less processing power, and you can't update it as much because you're not updating some server somewhere that you have to update the operating system. So, I mean, it's understandable. It's still pretty good, but Google probably has an edge there. Siri is another example. Siri, I know they go out of their way to not have any identifiable information about voice snippets that go through the Siri server. And that over the years, they put some of the processing on the device, I believe, but still a lot of it has to go out to the cloud. But even so, they're trying not to know anything about those voice searches. I think Google, Facebook probably do the same thing for theirs to a point, but I don't know. Apple's been upfront about that. So, I will say that I do wish it didn't take them so long to have acknowledged this particular bug this year, this time around. Reportedly, they might have been alerted to this bug 8 days ago, maybe, but only really acknowledged it a day ago. So that, it would be nice if that was not the case. So that is some valid criticism. I would say, I guess just to wrap this up, because is this particular bug is not something you need to worry about at the moment. It seems like it's been mitigated, right? but there's always going to be software bugs, and there's going to be privacy invading software bugs in every platform, any product. But what you have to do is decide for yourself whether any given issue is as sensationalized as sometimes the media portrays it. And when you're going to pick products, including like maybe more innocuous things like a TV, you know, when you pick these products, everything has these embedded networked software systems in them. When you're choosing these products to put in your life and to feed data to and to communicate with, etc., you got to ask yourself, you know, what company or companies do I actually trust? What is their business model? Are they incentivized to protect my personal information, or are they incentivized to take it and use it for advertising and all? And that doesn't mean that a company that has an advertising model is quote unquote evil. It just means that their incentive structure may lead them to build software that is, you know, not quite as privacy centric. It may actually lead to software that has features that work better or more richly than the equivalent on a competitor that is more privacy focused, but that's a trade-off in that case. And that's something that you can consider. You know, like if you think, oh, I'm going to put my photos in Google Photos, even though maybe you're uploading it to them and maybe they'll, you know, maybe someone deep in Google could theoretically look at it. I don't know if that's the case. I'm not actually not familiar at all with how Google's photo works, but say you didn't trust Google. You assumed that someone could look at the photos in there if they wanted to, but you only put up photos of your dog, and so you don't care. But you just love being able to find every instance of your dog when they're wearing like the different Christmas sweaters you get them every year. Something like that, you know? Like, maybe that's fine for you, even if you assumed someone could look at that data. But say you're somebody that has more sensitive photos, maybe you would not want to put them in a service that you assumed somebody could access, you know, internally. So you'd pick a competitor that promised that they couldn't access that. Or you would take pains to store your data in a way that you knew guaranteed that no one could access it, like encrypting it yourself and putting it just somewhere on a server, you know, like a Dropbox or something. There's lots of different ways and different valid reasons to be using any particular company's products or services, and you just need to balance those trade-offs yourself. But on a primary axis to evaluate a product is the company behind it. What's their incentive structure? And this is becoming more and more important as we have the Internet of Things. The idea that we have all of these devices in our life that are not traditional computers or phones that are networked, like our TVs. The friends of mine told me recently that it's basically impossible to find a TV that doesn't have a network connection, that doesn't download software updates, that doesn't have like Netflix built in. And to me, that's terrifying because last time I bought a TV was right when these smart TVs were coming out, and I intentionally bought a TV that did not have any of that stuff on there. None of that stuff. Because I didn't want any of that stuff. I was like, I plugged in an Apple TV into my television, and that's it. I trust Apple's software and hardware way more than I trust like a random software manufacturer's software stack. So I'm not pleased by the fact that all the TVs are networked today. There's fridges that have network connections today. There's all those smart speakers that have, you know, microphones built into them. There's those, I think, was it Facebook makes one, has this little screen with a camera on it. You can do video conferencing call. And I'm not saying any of these things are bad or these companies are doing anything nefarious, but these products are things that that have the potential, if there is an exploit, like the one that happened on Facebook, that happened on FaceTime, that, you know, they could be, you could expose you to risk of having your privacy violated or information, you know, made accessible to people that you don't want to. And you got to ask yourself, you know, is that risk worth the reward? And is the company making this one that I can trust to be working in my best interest or not? And that's an individual decision. But like, I don't have any of those smart speakers in my house. And if I were to buy one, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I might, I would, I'd probably lean towards Apple just because I trust them more, but their thing is very expensive. So I've been in places that have, you know, the Amazon Echoes and all that. You know, I didn't feel like they were, you know, violating anything, but also I don't think that those companies have the same incentive that someone like Apple does to, you know, protect my privacy. So, you know, I don't know. It's an individual decision. Okay, so I've been rambling on for too long about this. So just to reiterate, the FaceTime bug is related to the group FaceTime feature. It's not currently exploitable. You are okay. If you're really worried, you can turn off FaceTime in settings. Just go to settings, FaceTime, tap that button, turn off. And then turn back on again when the bug fix comes out in a few days, if not already by the time you're listening to this. Okay, so be safe out there. I think I will probably maybe do a series of podcasts, maybe under the Don't Panic theme. Maybe the Don't Panic will become the tag for this. I think I'm going to do a series about, you know, software security and what you can do, because software security is all about mitigating risks. It's not about eliminating them completely, and you need to have multiple layers here. If you go back and listen to my podcast, I talked about business continuity. I do talk about a lot of software that's related to mitigating risks, but maybe I'll do a little more of a deep dive in one of those, like password managers, I think are very, very important for helping that, and things like FaceTime or Touch ID, or maybe if anyone's interested, I could even do a deeper little discussion about how some of the security systems, or, you know, on the Apple hardware and software work. You know, like they have white papers about it, so I could try to summarize some of that stuff. Whatever, let me know. You can find me on Twitter at Stolton, STOLTON. You can find me on Facebook as well, Stephen Tolton. Instagram as Stolton. Or you can go to dailycronpodcast.com and use the contact form to send me a message, ask me a question, insult me. Rather, you don't insult me, but, you know, it's a free country. That's about it. So for now, don't panic and have a great day, and I will see you next time. Keep the lights low, 'cause it's convenient. Sky and sunshine.